Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take the gloves off. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. It's time to get out of your seat and make a little noise. Now get ready for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Lane. The Extreme Court. And America Today Live. Please try to remain calm. This will be your last warning. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And we are broadcasting from the Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders voice room over at PalTalk. You're welcome to come on in. We've got quite a crowd here. It's going to get even better tonight. And, hey, folks, one of the admins out there, you can take all the red dots off everybody now, at least for a little bit. Keep your eye on the Raiders heading into the room here tonight. First time I've seen a Raider in Pal Talk yet. Something tells me things are going to happen there. All right, folks, we've got 1 month until the first election in Iowa. What you will find at the top of the room here are a couple of links. And you can also find them, listeners, over at www.herncoat.com/cafe/index.htm, my homepage over there. There are a couple of links opened up that will get to the Iowa, that will actually show you all of the newspapers in Iowa. We'll also show you all of the radio stations in Iowa. We are currently under... I don't know how to describe the word I'm looking for here, but at any rate, Duncan Hunter is being ignored by the mainstream media, passed over quite frequently in the farce of a debate that was happening here last Wednesday, and basically just getting ignored. And I am convinced, I am just as convinced as I can be that the reason he is being ignored is because he's the best candidate. They can't possibly touch him. He is the single most conservative candidate in there. He is a regular guy. Now, granted, because he's a regular guy, he's one of us. Man, he's been a public servant for the last 20, 25 years. He's not the richest guy in the world. Now, folks, we do have some good news. I have heard from his campaign, have heard that we are definitely making a difference. We've gotten a lot more responses since listening to this show. It's working out good. Some of the campaign coffers are starting to pump up a little bit, but we need a lot more help. And, folks, on top of that, I want to urge everyone to take a look at the Iowa sites that are up there. Get a hold. Send some emails off to these radio stations. Ask them why Duncan Hunter isn't getting covered. Point them towards Duncan Hunter's website. Just have right at it. Let them know he's the most conservative candidate. Let them know that you have not heard enough from him on there. Now, much is actually going on with him around the country. He is basically working very, very hard. He has been on a lot of local radio stations around the country, which a lot of the guys I want to thank out there. And there's some definitely good news. We had a well, Duncan's been back in the news here. And, you know, it was the one thing I did not put up here For this battle, we'll get to it in a little bit here. A lot of news to go through tonight. A lot's happened in the last week here. We had the farce of a presidential debate there last week, which I can't believe this. We're definitely going to get into a discussion on this. CNN just definitely blew it hard. Blew it very, very hard. Put it up a debate out there and basically said this is where they're going to have to answer to their constituents about the topics and issues that are important to them. Did we see any of their constituents asking any questions? Now, out of all the people that watched the debate out there, you saw all the people asking questions. How many of those people would you have said, that's honest, run-of-the-wall, run-of-the-mill conservative? I wouldn't have said that about any of them. A couple of nut jobs in there, one of them holding up a Bible asking a very simple question. Do you believe every word in this book? And, of course, a couple of them sat there and stumbled over the whole question. Not one of them turned around and said, the most obvious question, well, sir, do you? That would have been more important. I would have turned right around and said to that guy, well, do you answer it? Do you believe every single word in that book? Let's see where you're coming from here first, bud. What the hell kind of a question was that? Crazy. I was a Catholic. I was raised in a Catholic school. But I was raised by Franciscans, and the Franciscans will tell you all kinds of different things about that book. Grace of Franciscans, the first ones to tell you that Moses never split the Red Sea. And I turn around and say, Moses kind of led the troops through a swamp there. And the horses and the chariots, they got stuck in the swamp. Blah, 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 blah. But, I'm sorry, but that was just the most irrelevant, undignified question to ask. A few other questions. The gay general, unbelievable, got up and asked about why don't ask, don't tell doesn't work, when it obviously had been working for him for all of 43 years. That's exactly why he managed to stay in there, made his way all the way to general. Just some of the unbelievable stuff, as if these issues were really there. Have you heard anything on the Iraq war? Come to think of it, have you heard anything in the news about the war in Iraq? You can go through all of Yahoo's website and all the news websites there. And one little article on the Iraqi news here tonight, and it was where they had uncovered a mass grave. What they called a mass grave had 12 bodies in it that Al-Qaeda evidently had filled up about a year ago, is what they're saying here. But Al-Qaeda definitely on the run hard there. Myself, have I got anything on them? Not too much. We got one here that says the U.S. is talking it's a little too soon to trust Iran on Iraq. Which we're going to get to as the course of the night goes on here. Other things in the news, and I think the biggest one, probably where I'm going to start at here tonight, is one of our arch enemies out there, the guy that is calling President Bush the devil himself, saying he could smell the sulfur when he left the stage of the UN. Hugo Chavez thought he was going to get to be a dictator for life. Thought his people loved him out there. Well, this by Oliver Knox off of the AFP here. The United States said today the Venezuelan voters had sent President Hugo Chavez a clear message by rejecting his push for broader powers in a weekend ballot that bodes well for freedom and liberty. Clearly, this is a message from the Venezuelan people that they do not want any further erosion in their democracy and their democratic institutions, according to U.S. State Department spokesman Sean McCormick. The people spoke their minds, and they voted against the reforms that Hugo Chavez had recommended. And I think that bodes well for the country's future, as well as freedom and liberty, said White House spokeswoman Dana Perino. The U.S. official spoke after Chavez acknowledged his first ever defeat at the polls after the weekend referendum, which would also have turned oil-rich Venezuela into a socialist state. Now, it went down to defeat by a narrow 51-49% margin. The Venezuelan people have spoken. We have no reason to doubt that this outcome reflects the will of the Venezuelan people, McCormick told reporters, saying of Chavez, I can't predict what course he may try to follow. It was the first time that Chavez, a charismatic left-wing firebrand who frequently criticizes U.S. President George W. Bush, has lost at the polls since he came to power in 1999. His past elections have been easy victories. It was a close vote, 51%. That's despite the opposition not being able to get out on TV and make its point. So I think that there's some interesting analysis that can be done there by political experts, said Perino. Asked whether Washington was satisfied with the results, McCormick replied, well, it's not for us to judge, but that the vote showed that Venezuelan voters do in fact want to have a say on how they are governed and who governs them. Chavez, whose ties to Iran and Cuba irritate Washington, has been counting on a referendum to continue his rule beyond January 2013, when he must step down under the current constitutional two-term limit. The 53-year-old former power trooper said he wanted the Constitution overhauled so he could seek re-election until 2050, when he would be 95 years old. He had also wanted to gain even tighter control over the country by putting more of the military under his command, permitting media censorship in times of emergency, and scrapping the central bank's autonomy. I don't know what he was planning on doing by that. That was a nutty move. That's probably the one right there that got it for him. You know, I mean, the central banks are, bankers, I'll tell you, they hold sway everywhere. All right, but street protests started by university students paid to those ambitions. Paid to those ambitions, growing into a grassroots opposition movement that eventually vanquished him in the polls. His exhortations that a no vote would be a vote for Bush and U.S. imperialism failed to carry the day in his favor. There was a disturbing few hours after the vote, however, during which the government gained no results whatsoever, and Chavez pondered what to do. I can tell you from the heart, for a few hours I debated with myself in a dilemma, Chavez said. I've now left that dilemma behind, and I'm calm. I hope the Venezuelans are as well. He added, now, Venezuelans, let's put our trust in our institutions. Yeah, well, this is good. But Chavez went down hard. You know, now he's not out of there yet. Like he says, he's still in there until 2013, so I'm sure we're going to be hearing more from this boy. You know, a man who has just nationalized all the oil companies down there. Real smart move on his part, you know. I can't understand why the bankers let him do that. You know, not for anything whatsoever, but, you know, obviously they saw something in it for them. All right. Moving right along here. Anybody got anything to chip in on? Mr. Chavez, real quick, if you do, raise your hand. If not, I'm moving right along here. All right, folks, this is good. This is good. I'm on a roll here tonight. I just got so much in front of me. Now, last week we started to talk a little bit about the Fair Tax Plan. And Giuliani must have been listening to us because Rudy has come right out against us. Now, face it, most of the candidates out there are supporting a fair tax, or at least some reductions in the taxes. You know, we also went over Fred Thompson's tax there last week, with, you know, either getting 25% or 15%. But, you know, it's in retrospect, you know, the more I look at it, the more I think that that might be a workable kind of thing. But let's face it, we are definitely looking for more tax relief. There are problems out there. The spending, the runaway spending that is going on with Congress, which is actually right now, man, we got more on that later on tonight. But it's got to be curbed, and the only way you're going to curb it is by taking their money away from them. I mean, that's the only way to do it. As a matter of fact, and I don't have an article here in front of me, at least I thought I did, but maybe I do. No, I don't either. Hey, baby cakes, do me a favor, find me the front of today's paper, will you? Thank you. Right, yeah, got my little girl there. Here in Massachusetts, back in 2002, the Libertarian candidate for governor did manage to get on the ballot a referendum vote on repealing the state's income tax. And needed, I don't know, well, it got, at the time, I remember the reporting being that it only won 48% of the vote. Now, they're reporting today that back then it only got 40% of the vote, with 48% of the people voting against it, and 12% of the people failing to fill in the little dot at all, which just amazes me. I can't see anybody looking at that question saying, gee, I don't know. Well, at any rate, it is coming back on the ballot here in Massachusetts. Carla Howell, the Libertarian candidate for governor then, I believe she's running again. I'm not as hard into the Libertarians now as I was then, but has managed to get it back on the ballot. Thank you very much, little girl. Yeah, this today, right off the front page in a Berkshire Eagle. It's a kind of ballot question that would seem irresistible to voters. Should Massachusetts eliminate the state income tax? A radical change would put thousands of dollars back into the pockets of families, but critics say it would deal a dire blow to key services, from education to transportation, wiping out 40% of state revenues and prompting a flurry of lawsuits. Now, voters rejected a similar ballot initiative in 2002, although by a closer margin than most had predicted. Now supporters are back, hoping voters have grown disillusioned enough with state government to back the change. Today, they say they will deliver more than enough signatures to the Secretary of State's office to move the question one step closer to next year's ballot. We've shown that a very large number of people are in favor of it, even though a large number of people didn't even know about it last time, said Carla Howell, the Committee for Small Government. I think it has an extremely good chance at winning. In 2002, Howell and other supporters did little to promote the question, and opponents did even less to fight it, assuming that voters would handily reject it. Instead, of the 2.2 million who cast votes that year, 40% voted in favor, 48% voted against, and 12% left the question blank, which I still find hard to believe. However, that was close enough to rattle opponents who are vowing to mount a vigorous campaign against the question if it goes before voters on the 2008 ballot. Howell said the group has well over 70,000 signatures. It needs more than 66,593 to win a spot on the ballot. Michael Widmer, president of the business-backed Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation, is one of the leading voices in opposition to the question. He said that eliminating the income tax would deal an $11 billion blow to the state, with ripple effects throughout the government. Efforts to cut education and Medicare would spark lawsuits, with the court likely siding against the cuts, he said. That would leave lawmakers with few options other than slashing spending on higher education, health care, and other areas, including state aid to cities and towns, which would place even more pressure on local property taxes as communities struggle to pay bills. In the end, the states would have to raise some other taxes or restore the income tax or do something because of its controversial and legal obligations, he said. There would be a total legal and political turmoil. Well, maybe that's what we're looking for. I'm not going to read the rest of the article here. But, folks, you can get what's at here. Now, Carla Howell has been stating right along that this is how the only way we are going to get them to cut this, to cut the runaway spending in this state. And, of course, the Democrats, they look at this, just like I said there, legal obligations. You know, as if all of a sudden, you know, the government has to care, the government has to take on a religious fervor, has to take on religious ideals, you know, but, well, it is a religion, it's secular humanism, we know exactly what it is, and must fulfill its obligations. Obligations, mind you, to go out there and fund dance companies, theater companies, projects which are meant to boost the economy, at more theater companies, you know, projects to introduce culture to the economy, to our tourist-based economy. And I read that word dance companies. Yeah, I got to tell you what, they spent more money on theaters, dance companies, museums, old theaters, you name it. I'll tell you what, folks, these people here have got state grants coming out the wazoo. And like I see, you know, like I've mentioned on here before, there are professional people in this state who do nothing more than fill out the paperwork and seek grants. And here in Massachusetts, baby, it's there's an old boy network going right along here. Well, I call it, I'm not going to tell you what I call it. It's a G-rated room, after all. But it's basically an old boy network. You know, the libs are all basically in with each other on this. They know each other. And, you know, as long as you know somebody and you get the paperwork filled out rightly, you know, they'll push it to where it has to go in order to get it in there. But it's good stuff here. You know, the way I'm looking at it this time, it has actually hit the ballot. It hit the newspapers. You got to remember that 40% of people voted for this before, and this is something that never hit the newspapers in this state. The Boston Globe never reported on it. The Boston Herald, the Berkshire Eagle, the Springfield Times Union, none of them. None of these places had given one ounce of lip service or even a mention to this this tax referendum. And still it managed to get 40% of the vote. Now it's out there. Now they have no way around it. And I think that, you know, it's going to happen. I really do. Now, whether or not they will pay attention to it, that's another thing. Referendums and votes in this state will only tell the legislature how the people feel, you know, how they are in a democracy. Now, you will note that a few years ago, before this, they had actually got overwhelming approval to drop the state income tax rate from 5.35 or 5.45% just down to 5%. And that was overwhelmingly voted for. I think it got 87%. The state legislature never did it. You know, it is not obligated to do anything underneath this, you know. So much for their version of democracy. You know, proving once again that we do indeed, in fact, live in a representative republic, and it will be up to that representative in the end, you know, which behooves you, folks. You know, this is the way it will always work in the end. You know, don't think that you're going to vote for someone out there and just get, you know, one side, one cheek or the other of the same behind. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to work out that way. It can work out a whole lot better for you. Listen to what they've got to say. Okay? And in the case of what's coming up 30 days from now, starting in Iowa, and will be continuing across the country, is the primaries. You know, and we want these primaries to come out and say, Duncan Hunter has come out on top. We'll let him pick whoever he wants to go there. All right. Now, along with Mr. Duncan Hunter, we have, and we know that Duncan Hunter is looking at a mirror trade policy. Basically, he wants to have free markets, has no problem opening up the markets to any country in the world, provided that country does exactly the same thing. If they're going to lay sanctions and tariffs on us, well, we're going to lay the exact same sanctions and tariffs back on them. You know, as Hunter has stated in the past, it's a, you know, he, it's what's the word I'm looking for? Well, at any rate, this is what the man wants. He wants a mirror trade policy. And he has said that there's no reason whatsoever we can't call all these back. Every single one of these trade policies is still open to negotiation. It can be rewritten at any time. We like that. Well, along with that, one of his fellow congressmen, and this is off of the Reuters News Network, unauthored, U.S. congressman said on Sunday that he planned to introduce legislation calling for the United States to begin talks with India on a free trade agreement. Now, Representative David Dreyer, a California Republican, said at the World Economic Forum India Summit, such a move would be a building block toward the success of the Doha Round of Global Trade Talks or the next World Trade Organization round. I'm going to introduce legislation calling for the beginnings of negotiation between the United States of America and India for a free trade agreement, Dreyer said. It will, in large part, be a discussion piece for us to just begin talking about this. He told Reuters after making the announcement to hundreds of delegates at a dinner time question and answer session with the Indian Trade Minister, Kamal Nath. I don't want to lead anyone to believe this is going to happen overnight or happen quickly, but the notion of discussing the idea of a U.S.-Indian FTA, I think, is important, Dreyer said. Nath told Reuters afterwards the idea had come up before and it should be examined. Asked if he would welcome such legislation, Nath said, well, we'll have to study it. We'll have to work towards it. There is no one-size-fits-all model of a trade agreement. Well, yes, there is, Mr. Nath. The Doha Round of Trade Talks was launched 6 years ago to boost the world economy and help poor countries export their way out of poverty. The talks have missed deadlines. WTO members agreed on Friday to finish negotiations next year. All right. Somehow or another, I managed to put that one out twice. So that's a little down on the pile there. Okay. Moving right along here. Would anyone like to chime in here? Folks, you got anything you want to add or subtract or correct me on this thing, feel free to raise your hand. I will be peeking at the screen from time to time. But if not, we're moving on here. Okay, now you guys remember back, I believe it was March or April, and I started to report about the demise of the U.S. automotive industry being legislated out of existence. And actually, that bill has hit, or it's getting ready to hit the White House. And, well, this off of Reuters by Chris Baltimore. The White House said today it threatened to veto legislation pending in the U.S. House of Representatives that would require the first big increase in three decades in the country's automobile fuel efficiency. Congressional Democrats have hammered out a complicated deal that could result in a 40% boost in fuel efficiency standards by 2020. The White House said it opposed provisions expected to be included in the bill that would require utilities to get 15% of their electricity from renewable resources by 2020. And raise taxes on oil and natural gas companies. It appears Congress may intend to produce a bill the president cannot sign, top White House economic advisor Alan Hubbard said in a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The keystone of the House energy bill, expected to see a vote this week, would raise fuel economy standards to 35 miles per gallon. The White House has backed as well as a boost in renewable fuels like ethanol, which is also expected to be included. But by seeking to include renewable requirements for utilities and higher taxes for oil companies, Pelosi is playing chicken with the White House and the Senate, said Kevin Book, an analyst with Friedman, Billings, Ramsey and Company. With primary elections in states like Iowa looming in early 2008, Democrats and Republicans alike are under the gun to show that they are working to ease the pain of $90 oil and $3 gasoline prices on consumers, Book said in a report. For that reason, we expect the White House to, we expect the House to proceed back to a leaner energy bill that will escape a White House veto and a possible filibuster threat in the Senate, Book said. Gasoline demand accounts for about 45% of the almost 21 million barrels of oil consumed in the United States daily. Many energy experts say the most effective way to reduce U.S. oil imports is to boost vehicle fuel efficiency. In a key concession to Detroit automakers, the deal sets separate standards for cars and light trucks, a departure from Senate-passed legislation that sets unified standards. Senator Pete Domenici, senior Republican on the Senate Energy Committee, told his staff to cease negotiating with Democrats on energy legislation. He said the renewable electricity standard made the bill untenable for many in the Senate. Utilities opposed Pelosi's proposal, which would impose penalties on those that fail to get 15% of their electricity from renewable resources by 2020. The provision has been included in prior energy legislation passed in the House, but not by the Senate. Utilities in the Southeast and Midwest states lacking the wind needed to justify new wind turbines would have to pay billions of dollars in penalties. Once the House passes its energy bill, the Senate would take up an identical measure, avoiding a bargaining session to rectify differences that have hamstrung previous energy legislation. But inclusion of the renewable electricity standard could spark a Senate filibuster, which would take 60 of 100 votes to overcome. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he spoke on Monday with Domenici and Democrat Jeff Bingaman, chairman of the Energy Committee, about the House measure, and he believes that there will be 60 lawmakers in the Senate for the energy bill, even with the renewable electricity standard. I think, yes, we do have enough votes, but time will tell, Reid told reporters on Capitol Hill. Reid said he expects the House to send the Senate the energy legislation this week. Well, this is too much. And the worst part about it is the way, the seeming way, that it's just going, you know, the car companies are just taking this, you know, taking it on the chin. And I can't understand why. Now, it's pretty much a proven fact that as far as energy efficiency in the modern internal combustion engine has reached its peak. There's no doubt in my mind about this. You know, you folks who listen to me for a long time know I was a mechanic for a long, long time. I was a car salesman for a long time after that. I know my way around the automotive industry. You know, I know what goes into these cars. I've seen the advances they made. Hey, I was a guy that threw a huge party when Dodge finally eliminated the carburetor from its, you know, from its lineup. And everything went to fuel injection after that. Made the cars run better. Made them much more efficient, and it eliminated all the problems the carburetors had, which had been ongoing since the dawn of the carburetor. You know, to me, it's the difference between your modern Bic lighter and trying to rub two sticks together to make fire. There's just no comparison between the two. The older carburetors were just junk. They clogged. They stuck. A little change in altitude, a little change in barometric pressure would just send them nuts. And people would have a very, very hard time getting the kind of performance and efficiency that they expected to get from their automobiles. You know, carburetors were just, I'm sorry, they were primitive. Caveman. Yes, hello there, real dude, how you doing? But it's just, it was a nutty thing altogether. Now, with the advent of electronic fuel injection, electronic controls, CPUs that gauged everything that was going on, and it kept everything right at its optimum as far as spark timing, the amount of fuel that was being set in there, and all this had basically rendered the internal combustion engine as efficient as it could possibly get. Now, the only way possible at this point in time to get more efficiency out of a vehicle is to lighten it up, which means less steel. Okay, now that is, it's going to tool down to a couple of different things for you, but in the meantime, the bottom line is going to end up being here that it's unsafe. Okay, now you stop and think about what the car companies did 10, 15 years ago when the CAFE first came into existence and what they had to do. All right, Ford started building a tiny little car called the Fiesta. General Motors just gave up and teamed up with Toyota and teamed up with Suzuki to bring you the Geo Metro, a little three-cylinder jobby there. Yeah, I got a little car, you know, as far as it went, and a fine vehicle as long as there was nothing else on the road bigger than it. Because God help you if you ran into something else with something bigger than it, because you're going to die. I mean, that's all there was to it. You know, tiny little Japanese cars for a long time. Look at what the Japanese have had to do to meet our safety standards. Now, safety standards have actually been around a little longer than this. You know, harken back to the days of Ralph Nader. Now, that's one thing I have never argued with Ralph Nader on, was the safety of automobiles. Some of the features had to be built into them. I think they got a little carried away with stuff, you know, but let's face it, airbags have saved lives. Seat belts have saved lives. Anti-lock brakes have been saving lives. You know, front and rear crumple zones have saved lives. Safety cage construction has saved lives. You know, the way that most modern cars are built now, where they take a hit on the front end and the engine is designed to roll out and go underneath of the car, while the rest of the car absorbs the energy from the impact. Okay, all things are designed into cars to meet safety standards. And these safety standards were all brought about by the government, of course, in league with insurance companies. And they're all trying to do the right thing here, trying to make vehicles a little bit safer for you. You know, which nobody in here is going to argue with. But the fact of the matter is, it costs, okay? These things have weight. They have mass, and they take up space, and they have weight. And that weight has got to be pulled around by enough power to make the car perform in emergency situations. It's just that simple. Now, if you're going to get that car to get better gas mileage, something's got to go. Okay, now you're either going to lose, what you're losing here is steel. I mean, let's face it. You're going to end up having to come up with composite materials. You're going to end up using a lot more plastics in place of the steel, which is all fine and dandy, right up until the fact when you run into the SUV, you know, which people are still buying out there, despite the fact that the libs have been crying ceaselessly over the damn SUVs. They take up so much room on the road. They're always in accidents. They cause so much damage when they do get into an accident. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, all drive them. Or else they drive that tank of a Volvo. Now, you know who I'm talking about out there, the liberals that are driving Volvos. All right, these are people who have already been in several moving accidents. Know full well that their ability to drive is going to lead them into another moving accident. They just want the safest car around that they could possibly get. Well, Volvo's a nice car for the most part. You know, you ever take one of those S60s for a ride, you'll see what I'm talking about. But the fact of the matter is, that's no lightweight vehicle. They do not get the kind of gas miles that they're looking to get. You are not going to get 35 miles to the gallon out of any Volvo product out there today. You know, I don't care if it's their smallest car or their biggest SUV. You will not get 35 miles to the gallon out of it. So kiss your Volvo safety goodbye. All right? This is what we're looking at coming down the road here. All right. Enough said on that one there. Okay. We're moving right along here. Now, a lot of things are happening here. Next thing I am going to do for everyone here is actually play you a video. I think it's a rather important one. And this is Mr. Bush today going on with what he thinks that Congress should be up to over the next couple of weeks. Let me see if I have got this thing figured out here and how to deal with it. And somehow or another, I know I can do this. Ah, here we go. There we go. All right, folks, you hang on tight, and I am going to get off the air, and I am going to play this for you.
Before they leave town again. That's much. That's not really a lot of time to squeeze in nearly a year's worth of unfinished business. In fairness, Congress was not entirely out over the past 2 weeks. A political maneuver designed to block my ability to make recess appointments, congressional leaders arranged for a senator to come in every 3 days or so, bang a gavel, wait for about 30 seconds, bang a gavel again, and then leave. Under the Senate rules, this counts as a full day. 30 seconds is a full day. No wonder Congress has got a lot of work to do. Congress needs to start by passing a bill to fund our troops in combat. Beginning in February, I submitted detailed funding requests to Congress to fund these operations in the war on terror. If some in Congress were holding this funding because they want to substitute their judgment for that of our military commanders. Instead of listening to the judgment of General Petraeus, they are threatening to withhold money he needs unless they can mandate an arbitrary date of withdrawal. This month, more of our troops will return home as a result of the success we're seeing in Iraq, people coming home. For Congress to insist on setting an arbitrary date for withdrawal would put the gains General Petraeus and our troops have made in danger, and that would threaten the security of our country. It's unconscionable to deny funds to our troops in harm's way because some in Congress want to force a self-defeating policy, especially when we're seeing the benefits of success. Secretary Gates and other senior Pentagon officials say the delay in our funding will mean this for our military. Unless Congress acts, the Defense Department will soon be required to begin giving layoff notices to about 100,000 civilian employees. Unless Congress acts, the military task force developing ways to better detect and protect our troops from roadside bombs will run out of money by early next year. Unless Congress acts, the Army will run out of operations and maintenance money in February. Unless Congress acts, the Marine Corps will run out of similar funds in March. Earlier this year, congressional leaders were trying to impose conditions on funds because they said our strategy in Iraq was not working. We changed our strategy, and now even many of those who initially opposed the surge acknowledge that it is achieving results. It is time for members of Congress to meet their responsibility to our men and women in uniform, and they should stay in session until they pass these emergency funds for our troops. Second, Congress needs to make sure our intelligence professionals can continue to monitor terrorist communications. In August, Congress passed legislation to help modernize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That bill closed critical intelligence gaps, allowing us to collect important foreign intelligence information about terrorist plots. The problem is, the new law expires on February 1st, while the threat from the terrorists does not expire. Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell has warned that unless the FISA reforms in the act are made permanent, our national security professionals will lose critical tools they need to protect our country. Instead of listening to the judgment of Director McConnell, some in Congress now want to restrict the intelligence tools that help keep the American people safe. They're blocking efforts to provide meaningful liability protection to those companies now facing multi-billion-dollar lawsuits, only because they are believed to have assisted in our efforts to defend our nation following the September the 11th attacks. Congress must stop this obstruction and make certain our national security professionals do not lose a critical tool for keeping our country safe. Third, Congress needs to act immediately to prevent the alternative minimum tax from hitting more Americans this year. The AMT was enacted in 1969 to ensure that a few hundred wealthy individuals paid their fair share of taxes. When Congress passed the AMT, it was not indexed for inflation. As a result, the AMT's higher tax burden is being imposed on more and more middle-class families. Last month, Treasury Secretary Paulson wrote a letter to members of Congress warning them about this, that if they put off an AMT fix, it could delay the delivery of about $75 billion worth of tax refund checks. Instead of listening to Secretary Paulson's warning, Congress continues to delay action. The longer Congress delays action, the longer Americans will wait to get their tax refund checks next year. Congress fails to act, as many as 25 million Americans would be subject to AMT. On average, these taxpayers, many of them middle-class families, would have to send an extra $2,000 to the IRS next April. At a time when many Americans are struggling with home mortgages and health care costs, the last thing they need is for Congress to stick them with an additional tax increase. Finally, Congress has important work to do on the federal budget. One of the Congress's most basic duties is to fund the day-to-day operations of the federal government. Yet only one of the 12 spending bills has made it into law. Congressional leaders are now talking about piling the remaining bills into one monster piece of legislation, which they will load up with billions of dollars in earmarks and wasteful spending. Now is not the time to burden our economy with wasteful Washington spending that will lead to higher taxes. Congressional leaders need to do their job and pass the remaining spending bills in a fiscally responsible way. If they send me an irresponsible spending bill, I will veto it. The end of 2007 is approaching fast, and the new Congress has little to show for it. I call on members to use the time left to support our troops and to protect our citizens, prevent harmful tax increases, and responsibly fund our government. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. There we have it. This is what Congress is up to. A little more going on here. It's not just those refunds that could be generated by the AMT being repealed. It's your refunds altogether, folks. They're already looking now at extending the deadline. Filing taxes, looking at all of it, because the IRS is just not going to be geared up, not going to be ready, not going to have the forms ready, not going to have all kinds of stuff ready. So you could be looking at perhaps going as far as next August before you get your refund check. Isn't it a wonderful thing? NumbersUSA.com. That's where you need to go, folks. Get down there, get a hold of your representatives, get a hold of your senators, tell them to move on that AMT. Do it quick, because if they don't, okay, you know, your plans for whatever you had for your income tax refund going to be delayed rather heartily. Not good news. Not good news by a long shot. It's foul. Now we got a couple other odds and ends going on out here, and let me see if I can dig through here. This is I got a couple here. I got one with Giuliani. But I got another one here. This is Hillary Rodham Clinton has come out again. Now this woman, I'll tell you what, she's spending more money. You folks, man, think you're going to get away without a tax break? Ah, here we are. Now listen to this. Now this is one here. I'm definitely bringing this up for discussion, and I want to hear people in on this here, especially my friend Charles. I don't know if Charles was here tonight, but Charles, I think you'd be up on this here. This one for the Reuters News Network came down about 1:42 today. Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton proposed today that a 90-day moratorium on home foreclosures to give financially troubled borrowers time to work with lenders and avoid losing their homes. The New York senator outlined the proposal in a letter to U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, who is trying to broker a deal with mortgage lenders that would help troubled borrowers. The crisis surrounding subprime mortgages extended to borrowers with spotty credit has unnerved financial markets and could deepen the slump in the U.S. housing market that some economists fear has pushed the economy close to recession. It is critical that we address this crisis, Clinton said in a letter to Paulson. The administration and the mortgage industry must reach agreement that matches the scale of the problem. If you produce an inadequate agreement or fail outright, the cost to our economy will be incalculable. The U.S. Treasury Department has been pushing the mortgage industry to agree to temporarily freeze interest rates for some borrowers who took out loans with low teaser rates that will soon be resetting much higher. More than 2 million borrowers are estimated to be facing resets. Clinton said any agreement should include a moratorium on foreclosures of at least 90 days on owner-occupied homes with subprime mortgages. Any agreement should also include a rate freeze on adjustable mortgages of at least 5 years or until the loan is converted into a fixed rate mortgage, he said. Clinton said the freeze would give the housing market time to stabilize and homeowners time to build equity. She also called on the mortgage industry to provide regular reports on the number of mortgages they have modified. If the administration fails to secure an agreement that includes those provisions, Clinton said she would push for legislation that would allow lenders to convert subprime mortgages into more affordable loans without permission of investors. She also called for a $5 billion fund to help hard-hit communities and homeowners cope with the foreclosure crisis. The subprime mortgage crisis has hit some states harder than others, including Florida, Nevada, California, Michigan, and Ohio, key states in next year's presidential elections. And with this, I'd like to open this up to the room. Now, folks, sounds good on the top. Really does. Looks really, really good. But where is that going to lead these mortgage lending institutions? Now, you've got to understand, these people all get their money from the Fed. Countrywide Financial out there has actually found a different federal agencies, which I didn't even know were out there. And I don't have the report here in front of me, but one of my things is called the Home Loan Provision Program, or HLPA or HLAP, something along that line. And it's not even your regular Fannie Mae or the other federally funded housing guarantee corporation, whatever. These people, they basically just get the money and write it off. Of course, they're expected to return it and repay it, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't come back. But the fact of the matter is, what I believe is going to happen here, and I could be wrong, and I'd like to hear from anybody in the room that might think I'm wrong on this, that what it's really going to do is dry up their liquidity, which in the end is going to have its biggest effect on people looking to purchase a home. Okay, the money is just not going to be available to people out there who may have good credit. Especially new people just getting married, new homes, new families trying to get started out, want to go buy a first house. Now, under the law, if they got good credit, basically most of these people are required to fill them with a loan. But if they don't have the money, how are they going to do it? If they don't have the money coming back in, if they're not able to do business on the terms that they have been doing it before, what's going to keep them moving from there? Now, this is a toughie. This is a real toughie here, folks. I don't see too many people got their hands up. I'm wondering if everybody out there is just kind of, you're wandering around in a little bit of a fuzz. What's going on here? All right, fact of the matter is here, though, a lot of people need it. Well, there, Mr. Nelson, I see you in here telling me that you're putting you to sleep and that I don't have a clue. Well, I would like to invite you up to the microphone there, Mr. Nelson, and state your case. Oh, he's bounced. so much for him. We could have had a chew toy here to work on for a little bit. But, this, I'd kind of like to open this up to the room. Do we have any of the financial experts in here tonight? Is my buddy Mike in here tonight? Yes, no? Okay. Not a big deal. Don't worry about it, Natalie. It's not a big deal. Thanks, he was being rather rude, and I just wanted to give him a chance to, let the listeners know out there just exactly how rude these people are on the left side of the aisle. This is exactly what it was. This guy here, didn't come up with anything whatsoever in the way of justifiable debate, just wanted to attack me. And I got to love it. I always take that as a win. Face it, folks, when you're out there and you're dealing with liberals and they start calling you names, don't get hurt. Don't feel bad. Don't get offended. Don't, take it right on the chin and look them right in the eye and say, thank you. I didn't think I would be able to win that debate so easily. Well, that's exactly what it means. They just handed it to you. Once they drop down and they start going to the personal attacks, it's meaning because they have nothing else. There is absolutely no way they can debate you on the subject. Once they hit that personal one. And sometimes it isn't even all that, that bad. But if they start calling you names, look on it. Even if it seems like a dignified name, like, hey, you're an anarchist. yes, I am an anarchist. We are a nation of anarchists. Stop and think about that. What is an anarchist? An anarchist is someone who has no rulers, who rules himself. Okay? Which means he doesn't rule anybody else. Nobody else rules him. That almost sounds like the definition of liberty to me. Remember that little word they stamp on coins? Most people manage to forget out there. Yeah, they didn't just stamp that word on those coins for no reasons. One of the biggest things we got behind here. Now, all right, since we're moving right along here, I got about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. next hour is going to be a little different. McCain come out very hard against Ms. Clinton. Now, Ms. Clinton's health care plan. A lot of folks out there are wondering. All she keeps speaking about is we need national health care now. Everybody deserves the right to adequate health care. And, you know, finally, if you start digging around, you start looking, how is she proposed to do this? Well, she just proposes on making everyone buy insurance. You know, she watched what the state of Massachusetts did, figured that's going to work. That's got to be the way to go. You know, even though the state of Massachusetts, in the infancy of this program, has already run $195 million debt up that it has no way of funding at this point in time. All right? And they're still claiming that 60% of the people that need to be signed up aren't on there yet. God help us with the other 60%. I mean, at the rate that it's looking at there, about $400 million or so. You know, somewhere along the line, you know, give or take a few hundred thousand. No big deal in a state of 2 million people. Yeah, we should be able to handle that. No problem at all. You know, $20 a piece. Yeah, we'll all just throw it right in the bucket and that'll cover it for you, right? Well, what they're going to do here in the state's the exact same thing Hillary's talking about. She will just come right in and deduct it from your pay. It will be added on. Well, just like your Social Security tax. And then trust me, at that point in time, it still ain't going to be enough. I promise you, she will forever escalating fines, taxes, duties, what have you. Of course, that will solve the health care crisis. Yeah, right, Hillary. At any rate, John McCain has basically come out today and said the exact same thing, which I almost admire this guy with some things. And this one here, I got to admit, I do. This is by Holly Raymer off the Associated Press. Republican presidential hopeful John McCain said Monday that mandating health insurance coverage makes about as much sense as requiring everyone to buy a house. Told that health care costs at Goss International, a printing press manufacturer he was speaking, have risen $4 million in the past year, the Arizona senator said he would focus on making insurance more affordable rather than requiring universal health coverage as some Democrats have proposed. Senator Clinton and the Democrats want to raise your taxes and they want a government mandate system. I'm not going to mandate that every American have health insurance. I'm not going to mandate that every American have a home. I'm not going to mandate that every American have a college education, he said, but I'm going to make them all affordable and available. McCain, who has proposed a $5,000 per family tax credit to help people purchase health insurance, said the cost would also come down if doctors were reimbursed for their time spent treating patients instead of according to how many tests they were. Every time we see an increase in medical technology, which gives them a better ability to take care of you, at the same time, costs go up, he said. Every time there is a technological advance here at Goss, there's a decrease in costs and an increase in productivity. Earlier Monday, McCain visited the New Hampshire union leader, the statewide newspaper that endorsed him a day earlier. McCain said he expects the endorsement will prompt some undecided voters to give him a closer look. I may be wrong, but I believe that when you have a large number of candidates and you have such a large number of undecideds, according to the polls here in New Hampshire, that it can be helpful to us. Good for him. It may just work out that way. I don't know. I just don't see John McCain getting up to the top here, especially after the debates last week. Now, John did come off as looking as one of the... actually came off looking like a compassionate conservative. You know, his statement that they're all children of God, you know, speaking about the illegal aliens being in this country, did not go unnoticed, you know, and actually drew some applause from the crowd out there. But it made you wonder about that crowd, didn't it? You know, I'm still harking back to that. And it was such a farce. That whole debate was just such a farce. You know? I mean, the guy who led in with his silly little song in the beginning of it, right to each and every one of those questions that was asked. You know, and you know what the worst part about it was? A couple of the questions there really weren't too bad. But who never got weighed in on? Well, our boy right here, Duncan Hunter. You know, how do they fail to get over him? I know why they're failing to look at this guy. Because they know right up front the mainstream media is scared to death of him. They do not want to get his name out there. They will not put him on the ballot. This is how they operate things here. They're going to keep Giuliani, they're going to keep Romney, and now Mr. Huckabee, who came off the same way there and is all of a sudden leading in the Iowa polls, you know, due to the answers that he gave the other night, and the questions were directed right at him. You know, they wanted to hit him. They wanted to make sure they get the religious thing out there. And mark my words, if they do this, they're setting Huckabee up. And I don't know if he realizes it or not. But at some point in time, if Huckabee does manage to get himself pulled out in front of the pack, wait and see if the mainstream media doesn't start attacking him as being some sort of a religious zealot, a fundamentalist, a deep Christian who will want to instill his Christian beliefs on all of us out there. You wait and see if they don't start attacking you for exactly the things that they're promoting you for right now. Wait and see. Meanwhile, we got Duncan Hunter waiting in the wings here, folks. Like I said before, please go up to the top of the of this room. Go over to www.herncode.com/cafe/index.htm and look at the links there. One of them is www.sugarresources.com, and they are it basically has a long list of radio stations, every radio station that is in the state of Iowa. There's also one there, and I can't read it here. My glasses just don't get that close, but they're right at the top here. You can click on those links. It will hit you with every newspaper and every radio station in the state of Iowa. All right? Folks, drop an email. Drop any friends that you might have in Iowa an email. Have them send that email on to all their friends up there. Let's get the man pushed to the front. If we can get him to win in Iowa, if we get him to win in New Hampshire, the mainstream media will not be able to overlook him any longer. They just will not be able to do it. Now, granted, at this point in time, it looks like the left is going to implode around itself. Doing a really good job at it, if you ask me. However, they, you know, it's, we can't allow them to do it. We just cannot allow these people to dictate the way the election's going. We are too big, too much of a rolling force here. Which, by the way, Willie and I have been talking here. This room may end up becoming a PAC, Political Action Committee. And I think it's a good idea. We are working on that. We're going to try to get this together. Okay. At any rate, folks, we've hit the top of the hour here. It's time to take a little break. Allow the sponsors to sell some of their wares, some of their goods. Allow Bob over at Hernco. Bob needs some things. Go take a look at what he's got over on the website there. Christmas is coming, folks. Good things for you. Good things for him. But we'll be right back. Folks, you're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com, the ASI Radio Network, brought to you from Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room. We will be right back, my friends.
Meeting new friends online can be hard to do at times. Chatting to complete strangers, showing cams with each other, and even sharing music. Can all this be done safely? No spyware, viruses attached to my computer. Absolutely. PalTalk lets you chat, video cam, share music with family and friends, including free chat rooms where you can talk to each other about any topic that is on your mind. There is a category for everyone. Which one are you in? Find it on PalTalk today. www.paltalk.com. www.paltalk.com.
The Politics Cafe and Politics Lobby 4 are proud to host an evening with GOP presidential hopeful Duncan Hunter on Monday, December 10th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join your host, Mark Belcher, for what is sure to be an exciting and informative interview. That's Duncan Hunter, Monday, December 10th, right here in Politics Lobby 4.
ASI. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all. That's right. At ASI.
Hey, this is Phil from America Today Live, brought to you by Politics Lobby 4. Join us every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time for America Today Live. We'll discuss issues, political issues, social issues, my issues, your issues. My wife says I have more issues than TV Guide. I haven't figured that one out yet. But join me every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time for America Today Live.
Hey, In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Pitt Murph. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Court with Randy Wright. Good versus evil, light against dark, and fact versus fiction. Stay informed, arm yourself, and prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time. You're listening to the Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. Coming to you from Politics Lobby 4, join us at www.politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com. Or join us live in the Social Issues and Politics section at PolitTalk.com. We'd love to see you there.
We better get going. We don't want to be late for the Hillary Clinton rally.
Oh, I'm still finishing up here, Jim. I'll meet you there.
Okay.
You're a liberal Democrat, a committed feminist, and you know that America is ready for a woman president. But you're not sure that Hillary Clinton is that woman. You're anxious, conflicted. Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, or you're experiencing mood swings. You want a woman to be president so badly that even Rosie O'Donnell is starting to make sense. If these symptoms sound familiar, you could be suffering from HAS, Hillary Ambivalence Syndrome, an anxiety disorder that affects up to 1 in 3 Democrats.
Which is why we developed OxyClinton.
OxyClinton goes to work immediately, gently muting the harsh upper registers of Hillary's speaking voice. Next, OxyClinton lowers blood pressure elevated by Hillary's contradictory positions on Iraq, while its anti-inflammatory agents soothe and relax skin that's been crawling since Hillary did her black voice at that church in Alabama. OxyClinton is not for everyone, and side effects may include dizziness, nausea, blurred vision, higher taxes, massive unemployment, riots, chaos, and a total breakdown of the U.S. healthcare system. So ask your doctor if OxyClinton is right for you.
Come on, Jan, or we'll be late for that Hillary fundraiser. Hey, wait for me!
If your enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton lasts more than 4 hours, consult your physician. OxyClinton.
Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com, and the ASI Radio Network. All right, folks. Heading on here. I love that OxyClinton tape. that was such a good one. We got some of the best videos over here, folks. And, we're finding them all over the place, too. All right, now, where were we heading to? All right, as long as we're on with Hillary Clinton and her complaints about the economy and her wanting to rescue the mortgages of all these people out there, and everything she says is heading towards incalculable problems. Yeah, you know, I got a little report on the economy here that might make you want to think twice. And this is these are facts off of different things here. This one off of the New York Times. The GDP grew by 3.9% in the third quarter. This is faster than expected, according to the New York Times. Productivity surged 4.9% in the third quarter, according to the Labor Department, the fastest pace in 4 years. Far better than expected, notes the AP. 1.25 million non-farm payroll jobs have been created since January. And that's 8.4 million jobs altogether since the 2003 Bush tax cuts. Now, this is according to Investor's Business Daily, which, you know, not being a liberal publication, was not surprised. The Investor's Business Daily also reports that the GDP is up 18.5%. The GDP of this country is up 18.5%. That's almost $1.8 trillion since the start of the Bush presidency. The October jobless rate is at 4.7%, according to the Labor Department, and it basically continuing full employment. And the deficit has fallen to just 1.2% of the gross domestic product. Negligible, say most economists, in a $14 trillion economy. And the Wall Street Journal reports, after the second Bush tax cuts of 2003, the budget deficit tumbled to $163 billion in 2007 from $401 billion in 2003. My. That must just send the Democrats reeling out there. And these are all folks that, facts that you can tell. I should post these up here so you folks can refer to them later on when you're arguing with the goofy Dems over it. And what's the other one we got here? Oh, okay. On November 8th, the Conference Board announced that discretionary income for U.S. consumers grew to a record high going into the fourth quarter. Some 73 million households, or 64%, have $1.7 trillion at their disposal. And this is up from 52% and $1.2 trillion in 2002. AP actually reports, if it feels like more and more Americans have extra money to spend, well, that's because they do. Just astonishing data. Completely blows away the Democrats' claims about the economy. You know, sorry, Democrats, but you're dust. You know, let me ask you, ask the room out there. Does anybody know anybody that's actually losing their house at this point in time? Anyone? No, I'm not talking about I'm talking about a house that they're living in and a working couple. You know? No, look at this. All the nopes. Nope, not me. Nope. No, yeah, I mean, we all worry about this kind of stuff. You know, you hate to see anybody lose their home. I mean, especially if they've been working right along and all of a sudden they just can't afford it, you know. But, hey, well, let's face it, the subprime mortgage thing. You know, the mortgage industry just went nuts when those interest rates went down there because they found they could borrow money and attract anybody into mortgages. You know, don't forget that the one overlooked spec in all of this is that the jumbo mortgages are going through the exact same rate of fallout. And this is something I got right from one of the officials down at Citicorp. You know, one of the featured people down there in the mortgage department. And he was talking about it. He says, and by jumbo mortgage, he's talking about people with $400,000 plus mortgages down there. You know, which are pretty much going the same way. Most of these things that are falling out are what they call speculative loans. How many people in here have ever watched the show Flip This House? Have you ever seen that? You know, my wife likes to watch it every now and then. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a great show because it shows you what people are actually going through. You know, they get themselves in with a budget, you know, with money that they've either saved or they have borrowed, you know, and they got so much time, they set themselves up, and then they go into that house and they just rip right through it and try to turn it over and sell the house. Now, every now and then you'll see some of these people will end up turning that house over. Now, usually the quicker ones will turn it over for less than what they expected, but they usually end up making a profit. But, you know, I've seen one or two of them on there hold out, you know, 6 months, a year. One of them was out there on the market for 2 years, still didn't manage to move his house. But he's holding out for his price. Evidently, he could afford to do that. You know, but this is what happens. When you get into that kind of market, all of a sudden you're looking at a business. You know, you're not looking at somebody's home mortgage anymore. You are looking at someone who was in a business, who went out there and took a risk. Now, I admire the people for wanting to do this. I do not admire people getting into this and having no idea what it is they're up to. You know, who basically will go in there and make the house look all pretty, but totally unfunctional. You know, or ready to pull apart, or, you know, something that will not stand to a good stiff wind after they get done with it. Which, you know, any of us out there that's ever been in the housing market has seen this. You know, people who blow out everything downstairs and make a nice, beautiful, open, wide living space, you know, only to see the whole house upstairs sagging and falling and doors that won't close and windows that won't open and, you know, things of that nature, i.e. the house that I bought that I'm living in right now and I finally got them all doing. You know, people do this, you know, you get into a house. You know, the guy I bought this house from, great guy. You know, I like him. He's still a good friend. I play golf with him once in a while. And, I mean, he didn't know what he was up to when he did this. You know, he really didn't. He liked the whole open living environment, so he blew out the wall between the dining room and the living room and the dining room and the kitchen and just made it all one great big thing. You know, and I ended up having to jack the house back up because, you know, the beams that he put in there to hold it all up just weren't quite enough, despite the fact that they were 6 or 8 inch oak beams. Didn't quite do the job. I had to jack it all up and put the walls back in there in order to make everything up here work. And it was funny. I mean, I couldn't get the doors to close upstairs in a couple of the bedrooms. And I was like, what's something funny going on here? You know, only to figure out if you go around and really take a look at the place, take a transit to it, you'll find, hey, it's too far here. So you're going to move it around, you know. But if you know what you're doing and you're up to this kind of thing, you know, it's a sensible business move to make. You know, I don't have any problem with that. You want to get out and go do that? God bless you. Have at it. You know, that's what life is all about, you know, having fun, making money. If you're having fun, you're making money is the way I look at it. And if you're not having fun making money, you're doing the wrong thing because you are in the correct country. You can do anything you want here. Make as much money as you can rise to. That's the way I look at it. Okay. Did Bill get back in here yet? I wanted to see him talk. He's not back. He said he will be back in a little bit. Which, by the way, our buddy Bill, No Strings. Yes, you are here. Yes, excellent. Listen, we wanted to talk a little bit about that show that you are starting up. I've heard this and that and everything else, but I have not heard too much from the horse's mouth. So, Bill, do me a favor. Jump up to the mic and tell us about your new show. It's coming up. It's going to start next week.
Okay, you're talking about the horse's mouth. I don't know how to take that, baby. And congratulations on your interview next week with Duncan Hunter. I hope everybody in the room will pass that around. I'd like to see a huge audience for that. Baby, if anyone deserves it, it's you. I'm sure you do an excellent job. About my show, I'm not too good at bragging about my show. It's just the best show out there. It's called America Today Live with Sammy and Bill. It's me and my friend Sammy. We take a look at hard-hitting issues. Basically, we hit one issue a week, whatever seems to be the topic of the day, or what seems to be the concern of the majority of the crowd. On the 13th, we'll be debuting our show after about a year and a half hiatus. We had it running for about 5 years. We're going to bring it back due to popular demand and talk about immigration this week. So it'll be really interesting. We'll be talking about immigration with Duncan Hunter on Monday, talking about immigration with Sammy and Bill on Wednesday, and then Pookie's new show, The Conservative Women, on Friday. So it's going to be an awesome week, baby. I'm really looking forward to it. Sammy's looking forward to it. We're working on the research. We're gathering this, gathering that. The one thing I can promise you about this week's show, next week's show, the debut show talking about immigration, is we're going to find some things, or we have found some things, that we're going to scare the hell out of you. You think immigration is just a little bitty thing, you know, nobody gets hurt, you know, it's just a victimless crime, yeah, it costs us, you know, a little bit of money, you know, and, you know, it's really not right for them to do it. Man, you haven't seen half the story. You haven't seen half the story. There's so much going on when it comes to illegal immigration, it'll make your hair stand on edge, and quite frankly make you a little bit paranoid, like it has me. So I hope everybody joins us this next Wednesday, the 13th, America Today Live. It'll be at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, because I'm a Central kind of guy, when I'm not. That word, I'm not Central, I'm more, you know, right coast, but you know. Diggy, I appreciate the time, and again, congratulations. It's going to be an awesome show. Everybody, spread the word. Spread the word. Next Monday, Duncan Hunter, December 10th. It's going to be awesome. Thanks again.
All right, you're welcome, Bill. Good luck with it. Best of luck. If there's anything I can do to help you out with it, you know where to find me. Yeah, right in front of you on your computer. I'll be there. Yes, folks, next week, don't forget, Duncan Hunter will be appearing here on the show. We'll be answering questions from people in the room. It's going to be a great time. But I really want to push here, folks, and that's part of the reason that I'm asking you to go up to the links at the top of the page, start contacting radios and newspapers. If you can afford it, take out a small ad in the newspapers, just directing people to Hunter's website, www.gohunter08.com, and just have them take a look. You know, tell your conservative friends out there, especially these guys that are all of a sudden looking away from Giuliani and Romney and McCain and starting to look towards Huckabee. You know, I don't want to badmouth Huckabee. I mean, Huckabee's got enough badmouthing going on out there. But this is a man who is just a rhino, as far as I'm concerned. After the way he has been raising taxes and pulling some of the moves that he has pulled down in Arkansas. I mean, I admire some of the things he said, but his record, that's another story altogether. And then I would have you take again another look at the record for Mr. Duncan Hunter. Impeccable record. Impeccable record the man has. Take a look at his voting record on every single issue, and I'll tell you something. If you can find anything in there where he did not vote with a conservative mindset, well, you let me know about it, and I'll talk about it. But I have not been able to find it. I've been through it, combed it with a fine-tooth comb. You know, what the man has had to say about every issue is just incredible. You know, matter of fact, I think we're even going to go down that road here. And I'm going to, which, by the way, Miss Merlin, guy, I did not miss your question during the break there. Do I think Hillary's going to win? No, I do not, and I will get to why. But first and foremost here, let us listen. And this thing we just put up here, and I don't know if the room has seen this one yet, but we are going to listen to Mr. Duncan Hunter in his own words. And let's see. And this is the one. This is what we're talking about right here. Load it.
Wonders of his love.
Come on, baby. Come on, baby. You can do it. Come on, muchachos. Oh, this is incredible. You gotta love it. I know my mic is on here, folks. And I will shut the mic down. Up, there we go. It's up.
I'm Congressman Duncan Hunter. And I want to talk to you a little bit about our trade with the rest of the world, and particularly with Communist China. Let me tell you what's happening in our trade with the rest of the world and the reason why we are having massive trade deficits. First, people think that we have free trade. There is no free trade because we signed a bad deal with almost all the other trading nations. And let me tell you what the deal is. If another nation is importing this chair to the United States, and that chair has maybe $17 in taxes. Let's say it costs $100 and $17 in taxes have been paid in China to make that chair. When that chair is brought to the water's edge to be imported to us in the United States, the Chinese government gives the maker of that chair a rebate for $17. They give them all their taxes back. So that company now is working tax-free if it exports to the United States. Now, when the American chair is exported to China and it gets to the water's edge at China, the Chinese government gives us a bill for $17. So they've given a subsidy to their guys for $17. They've given a penalty to our guys for $17. That means before any competition even takes place, the person who makes his manufacturing products in China has a 34-point advantage on the American producer. Now, you know something that's funny? We have that deal with the entire world. That means that a manufacturer here in the United States who has to pay income taxes, has to pay property taxes in the U.S., is basically taxed twice. He pays his taxes. A foreign dealer who makes his product in China or France or Japan has all of his taxes refunded by his government. And when he gets to our shores, we don't give him any taxes. So our guys pay two taxes, two sets of taxes. The other guys pay zero. And that imbalance is sweeping American products off the shelf around the world. That's a bad deal. In fact, you know, in 1973, when we entered this international trade deal, the main staff report from the Finance Committee in the United States Senate said this was a major blunder for us to have signed this deal that allowed every other country in the world to double tax us and get away with no taxes for their people. How'd you like to have a manufacturing plant and the guy on the other side of the street doesn't pay any income taxes? You'd have to hit a home run every day with your product just to break even. But let me tell you, I'm running for President of the United States. I understand the bad trade deal that we signed. And I'm going to be a little bit like Ronald Reagan. When he saw a bad arms control deal, he junked that deal and he brought the other guys back to the table for another round of negotiations. Well, you know, we've got one thing that the other countries don't have. We have the market. If they want to access our market, they're going to have to give us even treatment. They're going to have to give us treatment that mirrors the treatment that we give them. So if we don't tax their products, they can't tax our products. You know something else I think we're going to have to do with manufacturing? We have lost so much manufacturing to other countries. We're going to have to do some special things to get it back. And let me tell you why I'm concerned about manufacturing. For the last 4 years, I've been chairman of the Armed Services Committee. A couple of years ago, when roadside bombs started to hurt our troops in Iraq, I sent my industrial teams out in America to try to find one company left that could still make high-grade armor steel plate that we could pin on the sides of the Humvees to protect them against roadside bombs. We only found one company left in America that could still make high-grade armor steel plate. We are losing our manufacturing base. And a lot of it, you know, we're losing to communist China, and that also bothers me from a security standpoint. Because China is taking hundreds of billions of American trade dollars, and they're using our trade dollars to buy ships and planes and military equipment, some of which they're aiming back at us. Well, that's not right, and that's a security threat. And lastly, you know, China is cheating on trade just to make sure that we never win a trade competition. The way they're cheating is by devaluing their currency by 40%. That means that if they have a chair that's made in China and it's got a price tag on it for $100, and let's say it's sitting on a showroom floor, let's say in France, and next to it is a chair made in the United States, it also has a price tag of $100. By devaluing their currency by 40%, the government of China basically walks by that showroom floor and they mark down the price of their product by 40%. So they take their $100 chair down to $60 and say, wouldn't you rather buy the Chinese chair? It's now 40% less than the American chair. That dynamic that I've explained very simply is wiping American products off the shelf, not only in the United States, but around the world. That's cheating. Subsidizing your industry, even under the trade deal that we signed, is cheating. Well, I'm going to stop China from cheating on trade. Now, let me tell you, there's one thing that American presidents do that nobody else can do, and that is to negotiate trade deals with other countries. No American businessman can walk up and say, I want to negotiate my own deal with the government of China or the government of Japan. It takes a government to negotiate a good trade deal. I will negotiate fair trade deals that will give American workers a chance to win and give our businesses a chance to win and keep a profit. And you know something else I think we're going to have to do? Because we've lost so much of our manufacturing base, we've lost 3 million jobs in the last 5 or 6 years. We're going to have to do something special to level that playing field. We need to eliminate all taxes on American manufacturing. If we take taxes down to zero for companies that will stay in the United States and employ American workers at those good high-level manufacturing wages, if we do that, and we take down all taxes and eliminate all federal taxes for those companies, those businessmen will have a couple of bucks left in their pockets. They'll hire more people. They'll expand their plants. They'll buy better machinery. And the new workers coming into America's manufacturing plants will themselves be paying taxes. They'll be paying payroll withholding taxes. And you know something? We'll actually have more revenues coming into the federal government than we have right now, by taking taxes to zero for manufacturing. If you want to join me in making America great again and restoring this great industrial base, you know, I call it the arsenal of democracy. You know, in World War II, one of the great Japanese leaders told his colleagues, he said, we're not going to win World War II against the Americans. And he was asked why. And he said, because they have got the best industrial base in the world. They will beat us with their industrial base. Well, that great industrial base, that arsenal of democracy, won World War I, World War II, and the Cold War. We've got to make sure it's still here if another conflict comes around. You know, in World War II, we made a bomber every 60 minutes at Ford. And we made hundreds of thousands of tanks. We made 36 billion yards of textiles in this country. We need to make manufacturing great again in this country. And I want you to join me. I'm Duncan Hunter. I'm running for the presidency of the United States. And I believe in jobs.
All right. And there you have it, folks. Is the man on top of things or what? I'm going to tell you something else here. Where he gets all his info, I don't know, but he has got one hell of a staff working for him. I got a release here in my email. Matter of fact, it came out 3 days ago. But this is very important. Now, don't forget there was an event that happened in the news last week, and I know I didn't cover it, but at one point in time, we had our Navy was out there in the Pacific doing some exercises out there. And doing what the Navy does. And didn't a Chinese submarine surface right in the middle of all of it? And the admirals and stuff were going nuts. Nobody detected it coming in there. And it was just like, you know, this is like, whoa, baby, we had better take a good look at our technology. And a few other odds and ends out there that need to be covered. Well, right on the heels of this, here comes Duncan Hunter. Now, he's asking for Mitt Romney to do something. And the heading on this news release is, Hunter again calls on Romney to oppose Bain partnership with a Chinese company. This out of Columbia, South Carolina. At a press conference held in South Carolina State Capitol November 30th, presidential candidate, U.S. Congressman Duncan Hunter, again called on Bain Capital, a company founded by former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, to drop its strategic partnership with Chinese defense contractor Huawei Technologies in a bid to buy U.S. defense contractor 3Com. Hunter also called on Romney to use his continued influence with Bain to terminate the proposed merger between Huawei and 3Com, which, according to a report in today's Washington Times, would threaten U.S. national security. As the founder of Bain Capital, Governor Romney has an obligation to utilize his influence within the company to terminate the proposed merger between 3Com and Chinese defense contractor Huawei, said Hunter. In light of China's refusal to port several American naval vessels last week, it is increasingly more important that American military technology be protected from foreign companies, such as Huawei, that are closely aligned with the Chinese government. Now, the Washington Times reported that U.S. intelligence agencies informed the CFIUS Review Committee, responsible for examining proposed foreign investment transactions, that a merger between 3Com and Huawei would threaten America's national security. 3Com presently performs vital cybersecurity work for the Department of Defense. This proposed deal, which Governor Romney can work to terminate, should he choose to do so, is unpatriotic and damaging to national security, said Hunter. As further detailed in a resolution introduced in the House of Representatives, Huawei has close ties to the military of Communist China and allegedly aided Saddam Hussein and the Taliban. Earlier this month, Hunter sent a letter to Governor Romney requesting that he use his influence as the founder of Bain to terminate the company's partnership with Huawei, including the proposed merger with 3Com. Hunter, who is ranking Republican on the House Armed Services Committee, has not received a response to this letter. Now, there you have it, folks. All right, I didn't even know about all this until we've got Duncan Hunter's his press release out here. But the man is on top of things, and that's the point that I'm trying to make here. He's got his fingers into everything. He doesn't miss a trick. And this is important. All right, my buddy, Pox, you got your hand up there. Go right ahead.
All they can tell people is go to his website. You claim you're conservative, and you want a real conservative. Duncan Hunter is the real thing. Through and through, it isn't talk. He's got a record behind him. He's right on the issues. He's out front. If you really believe in voting for a conservative, there's one that you can count on, and that's Hunter.
Absolutely, my friend. I'm telling you, you're absolutely right. He has an impeccable record. You know, it's like, you know, a lot of people ask me in here, you know, aren't you going to give all the candidates a fair shake? Well, I've been giving them a fair shake for the last few months here, determining which one I'm going to get behind. You know, and really, and once I go behind somebody, I'm going to stick with them right to the end. You know, I really am here, and I am going to be very, very disappointed in the audience out here if we can't get this man elected. You know, it's just because it's just craziness not allowing it to happen. I know the mainstream media isn't going to help us with this. They have absolutely no desire to hand a win to the Republicans. They have every desire on trying to get Hillary Clinton involved, or trying to get Hillary Clinton elected all the way here. You know, craziness reigning supreme. I don't know what's the matter with these people. They all must think that they're going to get easy jobs in the socialist United States after she gets elected. And it's just plain nuts, and it ain't going to happen. All right, now, next thing we got coming up here. Oh, give me 1 second, folks. I will be right back.
You know, I got to say, again, this is Bill from America Today Live. If you take the time to research and get to know your candidates line by line, item by item, that's exactly what Duncan Hunter is. He is the conservative candidate. Right on all the issues, he gives you straightforward talk, just like that soundbite that he played, that Mark played a while ago. Simple English. Not political double talk. Duncan Hunter's the guy. Take a look. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill. Yeah, thanks for taking over there for me for a second. Just get a little distraction here that could not be avoided. It's true. The man is one of us. That's the point here. He does not mince his words. He makes it plain. He makes it simple. He makes it understandable. And you know why? Because he can look at it and understand it. You know, I'll tell you one thing, you'll never hear it coming out of Duncan Hunter. Well, if you can't figure it out from here, I can't explain it to you. It'll never happen. Will never happen with the man. All right, now, Mr. MD guy, my buddy from down in Maryland there, asked me a little bit about Hillary and whether or not I thought she was going to win. I'm going to say no. I really don't want to say who I do think will win. I kind of think it's going to point towards Barack. And it may happen. Mr. Barack Obama may end up taking the Democratic nomination. Watching what he says out there and the people that are listening to him and who he has lined up behind him, it's starting to look more and more pushing in his direction. The man is just a little calmer and a little cooler than Hillary. You know, personal-wise, he's a likable guy. In the end, he really is. You know, despite the fact that he's just a cold-hearted socialist. Which I cannot understand how that guy ever got away with teaching constitutional law for 10 years. But anyway, I got a story here that I think is going to back me up a little further on this. And this is an interesting one. This is by Justin Cole of the AFP News Network. Or the Wire, the AFP Wire, which I find to be one of the best out there. Very, very quick updates, very in-depth reporting. And this one is, it's titled, Hedge Funds Are Betting Big on the U.S. Presidential Race. Now, wealthy hedge fund managers closely guard their investment strategies, but mounting political donations reveal how some hedgies are betting in the crowded U.S. presidential race. Hedge funds' campaign donations have skyrocketed in recent years as trading profits have ballooned, and the industry has lobbied Congress aggressively this year against raising taxes on managers' often multi-million dollar earnings. Excuse me. Democratic White House hopefuls have been more successful so far compared with their Republican rivals in winning funds. The top grossing recipient is Democratic Senator Christopher Dodd, who garnered $714,500 in donations from the hedge fund industry in the first 9 months of the year, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The CRP, which tracks political cash flows, said Republican presidential aspirant Rudy Giuliani holds second place with donations of $565,000, followed by Democratic contenders Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards. They want to make friends in Washington, and campaign contributions are a good way to do that, said Massey Rich, a spokesman for the Research Center. Rich pointed out that Dodd is charged with overseeing the industry because of his chairmanship of the powerful Senate Banking Committee, while Giuliani, a former New York mayor, has strong ties to the city where many hedge funds are based. Paul Singer, the founder of the $9 billion hedge fund Elliott Associates, is one of Giuliani's backers and has also made a corporate jet available to him. Federal Election Commission records show that Singer has made the maximum individual donation of $4,600 to Giuliani's campaign this year. Elliott's associates staff have stumped up a combined $200,000. Now, Singer, who could not be reached for comment, became an advisor to Giuliani earlier this year. Now, Gregory Chase, who runs Chase Capital Management, says he has spent about $500,000 of his own money promoting Democrat Mike Gravel, a former senator. And there's somebody I've never even heard of, but they, you know, obviously the hedge fund manager's looking forward to him. You know, his explanation is he's been very unhappy with the United States foreign policy and its dependence on foreign oil over the last few years. Now, the currency trader can spend as much as he wants because he's acting independently of Gravel's official campaign and not bound by U.S. campaign laws, like Singer, which cap donations. Chase has placed advertisements in USA Today, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other major newspapers in support of Gravel. He offered to buy $1 million in advertising from NBC in October after the nationwide television network locked Gravel out of a debate featuring the seven other Democratic candidates on fundraising grounds. I think there's a lot of people in the financial industry who take issue with the political turn that the United States has taken lately. My goal is at least to sway, maybe in some very small way, public opinion, Chase said. Gravel advocates cutting U.S. dependence on foreign oil, withdrawing troops from Iraq, simplifying the tax code, and cutting the Pentagon's budget. Other investment gurus are also placing bets. Mark Lazary, the founder of the $20 billion Avenue Capital Group, has dug into his wallet for Hillary Clinton. Lazary has long supported Democrats, and his fund employs Clinton's daughter, Chelsea. Well, Lazary also supported the Clinton Global Initiative set up by former President Bill Clinton to address poverty alleviation and other social issues. Now, FEC records show Lazary has given $4,600 to Hillary's campaign's presidential bid, while the CRP says Avenue Capital has donated funds to the campaigns of other Democratic lawmakers. An Avenue Capital spokesman said Lazary was not available for comment. Employees at the Fortress Investment Group, who have supported former Democratic Senator John Edwards and Republican Mitt Romney, has gained... They've supported Democratic Senator John Edwards. Republican Mitt Romney has gained funds from an executive at Bain Capital, which he co-founded during the prior business center, which we also just mentioned in the last news report there. FEC records show Republican Senator John McCain and former Republican Fred Thompson have also secured hedge fund donations. The investment pools used to be restricted to rich investors, but now count pension funds and universities as investors. Hedge funds typically chase lucrative returns through risky investment strategies. Concerns about investor protection have increased following the $6 billion implosion of the large Amaranth hedge fund in 2006, because of several high-profile cases of insider trading. The trillion-dollar industry is represented in Washington by Managed Funds Association, which runs a well-funded political action committee to support its lobbying efforts. So there you have it. You know, and I think, you know, the bottom line that you're looking at all here, no way is Hillary a lock at this point in time. She's fighting hard. But, you know, and so far, I think the biggest thing she's been fighting is just to keep it from exploding. Now, and I think that the one thing that really killed her, and I'm going to be honest with you, a lot of people aren't looking at it yet, was the prior Democratic debate. Now, a lot of people even in this room would argue with me and ask me if I watched the same debate. But I did watch Barack Obama go right up one side of Hillary and down the other side. And he got done with her. She stood there with a caught-in-the-headlights look and couldn't do anything but just start mumbling. And she mumbled about 30 words that were about as incoherent and unconnected as any person has ever put together in her life. Now, I'm sorry, but that did not go unnoticed by a lot of people out there who are watching that debate. This woman will crumble under pressure. Okay? She's not going to make it, and I do not think. I'm not going to say that no woman will ever take it, but I think she's pretty much ruined it for women. Into the future. It's just that one little thing right there telling me, no, she's not going to do it. You know? It's, you know, what are you going to do? You know? She ain't doing it. I really don't see her as coming out of this on top. Not even a small chance of it. Okay. Now, where are we heading from here? Any hands up? Anybody want to weigh in on this here? Anybody think I'm wrong? Anybody think Hillary's locked? Anybody think the mainstream media's really got her nominated? Ah, Bill, you got your hand up. Go right ahead.
I think it's interesting to note that Hillary has decided to go on the warpath and kind of be a little more deep, more offensive than defensive. I know Barack started a new site today to document all the times that that Hillary attacks him. So it ought to be interesting how the internet pays off this way. Now that this is going to be web page, you know, tick for tat. And everything's going to be documented. It ought to be very interesting from now on how this all plays out. Hillary is not bulletproof. I mean, anyone who doesn't have a care in the world about their career, you know, can attack her. That's not a problem. Just don't get in a plane with her or when she charted. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, you're welcome. My buddy, MD guy. I was hoping I answered your question. Glad to see your hands up. The mic is all yours, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. It seems to me that there may be some undercurrents regarding Hillary's campaign. Specifically, the driver's license proposal by Elliot Spitzer in New York. You know, I'm wondering, did they have any discussions with Hillary's campaign prior to doing that? I'm sure that her campaign, with all the polls that they run, would have known, you know, what sort of a reaction that would have brought about. So, you know, was that done without her knowledge? And the other issue was the mother of all income tax reforms by Charlie Rangel. You know, he has to know that politically, that will not be discussed during a presidential election year. But it just seems to me that Rangel and Spitzer gave the Republicans two pretty good clubs to beat Hillary Rodham Clinton. And these both came from the state of New York, which you would think she would have some sort of an inkling as to what's going on. So I'm wondering if you have any comment on that, Mark.
Well, as far as her listening to her polls, I'm going to be honest with you. I think she suffers from the exact same disease that John Curry had. They surround themselves with people that pat them on the back. And that is who Hillary is polling. Hillary is preaching to the choir for the most part, the way I can see it. You know, when she goes out and she starts saying, I talk to a lot of people that tell me, it's the same people she talked to about every other thing. And these are all people, you know. She's not going to have anybody around her that's going to disagree with her. She isn't. And everybody there's going to tell her anything, you know, anything that she says, why, that's just so nice. And if she asks them for advice, it's going to come directly from the dead left. I really do. I mean, you know, as far as her being in touch with the whole country, come on, let's face it. How many people has she gone out there and told them how she's going to raise her taxes? Find them. How about the statement last year? Well, the federal government needs to take that money from you and take care of it so that you can have it later on, because you won't do that for yourself. I mean, you know, this didn't go unnoticed. You know, we see this. No, I don't think Hillary has a shot. Well, no, she's got a shot, you know, but that's as far as it goes. In the end, I hate to say it, but I think this guy Chris Dodd's going to end up getting it. You know, maybe Barack. Barack is surprising me. When I see him up there and I see some of the guys he's got behind him, he's got a lot of union people behind him, big time. And why, I don't know. I have not heard him address anything union-wise or not. But when you see him, you can see the union representatives all standing behind him. You know, they're there. You know, and I have not heard that from Hillary at all. I have not heard much of union support for Hillary. Like I say there, Dodd looks good. Dodd at least talks a very good line. Now, the other guy, I've heard Dirty Dick Durbin, he ain't going anywhere. I don't think he stands a snowball's chance in hell. I really don't. But Hillary, nah, you know, she's not the lock. She really isn't. I personally, if it was me, I'm coming down between Chris Dodd and Barack Obama, with, in the end, Dodd getting it. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, like I say, jury's still out on it. My buddy Pox probably explained this a little better. Go right ahead.
After studying them for so long, I never underestimate the Clintons. They always find a way. Now, those two have been underestimated. When you think you've finally beaten them, you only find they seem to find a way to win. And remember the little article Novak said that Hillary Clinton has dirt on Barack Obama. Just don't sell these short. Bill Clinton knows if he doesn't get Hillary elected, he's going to have hell to pay for the rest of his life. Because she paid her dues with him. And he's going to find a way. They're going to find a way to get this nomination. I disagree with you. I just never underestimate Bonnie and Clyde Clinton.
I think that's well put. You could be right. I mean, you know, some of the underhanded tricks that they've been accused of over the years there, some of them that have proven to be true. Yeah, they will. There is no depth to which they will not drip, no doubt, to which they will not stoop. All right, Mr. Manscaped, you've got your hand up there. Want to add to the conversation? The mic is all yours. Up. Oh, he took it right down again. Somebody dotted him. Natalie, don't dot him. Let him go for a minute. Let's see what he does. Go ahead there, Mr. Manscaped. The microphone is all yours.
Gee, thanks. I won't be long here. I just put my hand up because I heard the phrase the gentleman said before, they always find a way. We're referring to Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and it seemed to be, if you heard what he said, Hillary and Bill Clinton. In other words, when Bill Clinton was president, it was Hillary that was also president, and now Hillary is running for her party's nomination, and again, it's like two people as one. And they always find a way. I remember a doctor speaking about cancer like that. The cancer always finds a way. So I wonder if we're going to fight cancer or we're going to succumb to it. Hey, thanks for the break. You're a nice guy.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks to add to it. You could be right. You could well be right. Pox might be right about this too. You know, they could end up going in there. You know, but I still think they suffer from John Curry disease. I really do. You know, John Curry had, as bad as the premise was, I got to admit, the man was loyal to it and he stuck by his guns with it. You know, John Curry was not a leader. Okay, John Curry was the loudest voice in the mob. But he did not open his mouth until he knew exactly what it was the mob wanted. He never pushed the mob in one direction or another. But once the mob made up its mind, John Curry was on top. And that is exactly the way the man acted when he got, you know, when he was running in 2004. Yeah, we knew this. You know, I see Hillary going the exact same way. You know, if somebody is telling her something she don't want to hear, you know, no matter how truthful it is, I could just see her just tossing the guy. No, he's no good. You know, he's bringing me down, whatever. You know, I don't think, you know, unless she's got, you know, a few people that in there that's been with her forever that could tell her something like that. And personally, I think she's probably got them so badgered that they won't. But, Pox, you do have a big, big point there. You know, somehow or another, they do manage to find a way to do what they got to do. But we'll see. You know, I'll be honest with you. She may end up getting the Democratic nomination. But to see her winning the general election, sorry. You know, the Democrats were all busy saying, how could 60 million people be so stupid? I'm sorry, but I don't see her getting more than 25 million votes in the popular. Tops. That's it. And, you know, and I'm going to sit here and tell you, how are 25 million people going to act so stupid? But you never know. I mean, you know, she's telling them what they want to hear, as far as I can see. All right. Looking through the stack here, see if there's anything I missed. Actually, there's a lot of stuff I missed. I always come here readily prepared. this is one I started to talk about at the top of the show. I never got into. It's about Mr. Giuliani here. Actually brings up a couple good points, and I'll see if I can bring them up here. I don't remember what I said there. It was the fact that, you know, he must have been listening to last week's show, and we were talking about the fair tax. Now, this is by Mike Baker of the AP. Republican presidential hopeful Rudy Giuliani criticized the fair tax plan that has been touted by rival candidates Mike Huckabee on Monday, saying it could hurt home buyers. The former New York City mayor cited the struggling U.S. housing market as a reason to avoid the plan, which would eliminate all taxes on income and investments in favor of a hefty federal sales tax. A questioner asked about the plan did not mention Huckabee, nor did Giuliani mention his rival in his response. I think there are several tax deductions that are vital to our economy, Giuliani said. This would not be a good time. I don't know if there would ever be a good time to do this, to advocate ending the home mortgage deduction. The home mortgage deduction is considered by many critical to the ability of people to buy a home and keep their home. He also said deductions for charitable contributions and state and local taxes were important tax breaks that the plan would eliminate. The plan calls for getting rid of the Internal Revenue Service and giving taxpayers a monthly rebate on taxes on purchases up to the poverty line. Why waste our time trying to do this if we can't actually accomplish it, Giuliani said. I try to put my time into things that we can actually accomplish. Still, Giuliani said he, too, wants to simplify the tax code so a return could be completed with one piece of paper. Huckabee is running about even in Iowa with Mitt Romney, according to a Sunday poll in the Des Moines Register. Huckabee is at 29%, to Romney's 24%, with a 4.4 percentage point margin of error. Giuliani is at 13%. Giuliani spent much of his time in Greensboro criticizing Democratic proposals on health care, education, and pensions. He said the Democratic presidential candidates touting those programs are pushing the country toward more taxes when it needs more investment in private business. On education, he discussed his plan for school vouchers, saying a lack of choice in education may be the biggest civil rights issue of the day. Giuliani said he, not the Democrats, was best suited to handle the millions of Americans who live in poverty. We have to have a society that rewards success, Giuliani said. The only way in which we can get people out of poverty is to help them help themselves by giving them the opportunity for a good education, the opportunity for a good job. That's how you deal with poverty, not with government welfare programs. Kind of got a point there. You know, I'd like to see it happen. But the fair tax, I still think, you know, I reading this, I don't think the man understands it. I really don't. I don't think he understands the fact that you won't be paying any taxes out of your paycheck to the federal government. So therefore, there will be no need for you to get a deduction. And grant you, that deduction is a big thing for all of us homeowners out there. You know, who you look at getting that mortgage interest rate knocked off of it every year. You know, and that's a great thing. But personally, I mean, look, that cuts my taxes about 5-6%. You know, maybe a little more than that. I don't know, I don't have my return in my hand to tell you. But, you know, cutting 6 or, suppose it cut at 10%. You know, you're weighing that against cutting at 100%. That's a no-brainer to me. All right, my buddy there, Mr. Manscaped, your hand is up again. The microphone is all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Zilla. I'm just curious in that report about Rudy's commentary. Does it say anything about how many times he used the words 9/11? In his words, in his commentary, I know he likes to use the words 9/11. He's sort of got it's like his mantra. I'm just wondering, did he say 9/11 four or five or 15 times in that the report, sir?
Nah, not really. But then, you know, it's look, he was there, and he's going to use that. He's going to use anything he gets his hands on at this point in time. Although I got to admit, now listening to the man, you know, I think the accomplishments he made before 9/11 are going to hold stronger. You know, the fact that he reduced crime in New York City the way he did. Not a bad idea. The fact that he cut taxes in New York City and managed to raise, the tax coffers. You know, not an easy feat, but he pulled it off. You know, and that's one thing you have to admit about Rudy Giuliani, despite the fact that, you know, we don't care for a lot of his underlying principles. You know, especially on abortion and more especially on gun control, which I think the man could end up being a disaster there. You know, you got to admit that he got things done in a hostile climate. You know, and as far as that, I mean, you got to hand him warrior status at that point. You really do. You got to turn around and say, look, this man went in there and battled with very, very obstinate people and won the battle. You know, you can't overlook that. You know, he is a strong candidate. You got to hand him that much. You know, but, and Mr. Great American, I'm with you on that one. Gun control is the ability to hit your target. You know, that's what it's always been me. The little sticker on the back of my motorcycle helmet says exactly that. And that's the way it should be. You know, so I do think he's going to be a disaster there. Back again is why I'm with Duncan Hunter. Duncan Hunter is going to uphold the Second Amendment the way it stands, you know. The right for the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, you know, which doesn't mean that you can walk around it, you can't look at it, you know, you can do a little bit to it here, a little bit to it there, you can push it back to the states, or blah, 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 blah. No, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the way it needs to look. All right, my buddy Manscaped, go right ahead there.
Thank you. I should say it's very important for me to say that I'm an ambassador for the NRA, and I've been associated with the NRA since, I think, the early 90s. So I'm all for the Second Amendment. I have a problem with you, Rudy, with that one. But there's some things that need to be put forth. If criticism of President Bush in the two terms he's had to... the phrase consolidating power, he's been accused of doing just that, trying to take an imbalance in the trinity of our form of government and making the executive branch the dominant force in the leadership of our nation. The phrase was recently referred to Rudy as Bush on steroids, and I think everybody should be aware of the fact that he was a power monger in New York City as mayor, and one of his techniques, you know, he's a lawyer, he's a very good lawyer, in fact, and one of his techniques was to stonewall his associated departments for, you know, various files, forms, and communications, to the point where he had to take them to court to get them. And he always used to lose these judgments, and but win the effect of delay in stonewalling. Sometimes 2 years would pass before justice was served, and the department interested in getting the information that he would withhold, it wouldn't matter after 2 years. And in fact, some people would leave their jobs and so forth. Rudy was responsible for changing 3 or 4 elements of the New York City Charter, which is one of them that he didn't manage to change was the term limits. He tried to run for a third term and failed. But generally speaking, he's quite willing to close the doors on his team and start to put the hat on, the dictator hat, I think it is, and let all comers come and get them. I want to close my little rant here by saying I understand that the New York City Council actually had a budget put aside for suing the mayor so that he can get the communications they were rightfully entitled to in a timely manner. So these things need to be learned about the man, and I want to thank you for your time, for letting me speak. And Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks. Merry Christmas to you. All right, and in defense of Rudy Giuliani, comes his biggest supporter in the room, my buddy Dave from Down and Maryland. Hey, Mike's all yours. Have at it.
Hey, Mark, how are you? I was at the GOP meeting. Sorry I missed the show. In retrospect, I thought about coming up to the mic and asking Manscaped to come up and give his credentials as to how he knows so much about Rudy Giuliani. Is he a New Yorker? Is he a politician in New York City during Rudy's administration? Or because I worked for Rudy. I've worked for Rudy since he was a... And since he was a mayor in New York City, I supported him. I just wanted to know what the credentials were.
Hey, go right ahead there, Manscaped. We got 1 minute left here, though. You got to cut it quick.
I just want to say that Bernie Kurek also worked for Rudy Giuliani. And what difference does my credentials make? All you need to know is I'm an American citizen, I'm self-employed, and I have a good education. And I was born and raised in the New York metropolitan area. That's all you need to know, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, there you go, Dave. Well, that's no. I appreciate your comments there, Mr. Manscaped. Thank you very much for coming in. But, folks, Mater D has already disappeared, taking his keys with him, so now I got to go find mine to open the door. Let all you fine people out of here. Those of you who are leaving, of course, there's always going to be a bunch of hang around the bar here. And I have an audience, there's going to be a waitress or two hanging out here, too. I don't know what they're up to, but they don't look too big a hurry to get out. Although they have done their jobs, the tables are all piled high with the chairs, the lights are dim, the sign is out front, and we have got to close up the cafe for tonight. So, folks, thanks again for coming and listening. Don't forget, next week, here will be Duncan Hunter on this radio show, answering questions from the people in this room. And it's going to be a great show, great time. Can't wait to talk to the man, and it's going to be a very, very, very good show, very interesting. You know, there are questions out there that the mainstream media or none of the debates have managed to ask him that we are going to let him air himself out on. And the one thing, you know, his campaign manager said right up front that there is no need to pre-send or pre-screen any questions, none whatsoever, that Mr. Hunter will be glad to answer any question we ask him. That was a brave statement, especially knowing some of the questions are going to be coming from this room. Admins, we must get together this week at some point in time, so please drop me a line and let me know when everybody is going to be available for a meeting. But, folks, thanks once again. You've listened to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com and the ASI Radio Network. We are signing off, and we'll be right back here again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks a lot with the Duncan Hunter interview. We'll see you all next week, folks. Thanks for coming in.